peace. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We are at 1 year, our 1 year anniversary of the Chop Shop. It has been an incredible, incredible journey. We just wanted to thank everybody for tuning in and subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts, including our YouTube channel. There are some full video podcasts up on our page. Please go check them out if you haven't done so. And we're going to do something a little different this week. We're going to run it back all the way to the beginning. That's right. Full circle this week with our man, Sean J. Period. If you haven't listened to our first episode with Sean J. Period, no need to scroll through the podcast feed. We're just going to run it back right here. Like, subscribe, and follow, please, on all podcast platforms. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Official Chop Shop Pod. Also, if you're in some need of merchandise, please check out the website as well, officialchopshoppod.com. There's some fresh stuff up there for you guys. Let's get into it.
There's some bad records out there. Hold on. Let's see. Worst produced records of
oh, it's got to be all time. It's going to have a whole catalog.
You don't fuck with
Oh my God, no. Like, those records did not age well. Those beats did not age well. But he is definitely on the list of worst producers to ever. Yo, come on, man. Like, he had some steamers, but I just think it worked right. But those records did not age very well, bro. If you listen to them, it's
yeah. Welcome to the Chop Shop. I am Eddie James. And sitting next to me is my trusty partner in crime.
Yes, sir.
Bro, co-host, yes, DJ sir. React.
EJ, my big brother, bro. My brother. EJ the OG.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes, yes.
Welcome
to the
Chop Shop, man. First episode. I am so fucking excited, man. So excited.
Yes, sir.
Woo! So excited.
I gotta get a better woo.
hey, speaking of chops, shout out to Hassan Mackey, man, and YU the 78er phase one.
Yes,
the record
yes.
that you hear in the background right now is called The Upright. Hit the link in the show description. And you know who it's produced by? It's produced and arranged by my man. My partner in crime, my man Eddie James.
Yes, 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 y'all. To the beach, y'all.
I was on the scratches, too.
Yes, you killed it,
bro. The hook, when you listen to the record, the hook, that's me on the cuts.
My God. DJ React on the cuts.
On the cuts.
Man, what's up, man? Our first show out the box, bro. Here we are here.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for coming up with the idea of the Chop Shop. Because I was terrified of it at first.
it took you a little while to get on board, but hey, we're here. Like I said, you know, it's the first episode, and man, we got a fucking good one for you today, man. Everybody who's listening, Sean J. Period is here remotely because technology, right? Sean J. Period is here. We're going to be talking to Sean about his story and his production story and his come up. That's what this show is all about. Not just for producers, but for music lovers, man, for everybody. If you're a fan of music, you're a fan of this show right here. This is going to be some good shit, man.
It is, man. I'm excited, brother.
I'm excited too, man. I'm excited. How was your week? Let's just start with that.
Man, my week was great, man. Coming back from Florida. Last week.
You're fancy.
Yeah, man. It was knock it off, man.
Fancy.
Florida is great, man. I spent some time there, man. Got a chance to visit with some people I love. And the weather, speaking of love, the weather was all love, bro. It was like 80 every day.
That's great. I was here in New York City with the bipolar ass weather, hanging out with the rats on the M train. and hanging out with the bums on 34th Street. It was a lot of fun. Needless to say,
that is so cruel, man. We have the best city on the still the best city ever.
Yes, I agree. But my week was good, and then after that, I ventured up into Stamford, Connecticut at my residency, Fortina Pizza in Stamford. Mm-hmm. If you ever want to listen to some dope shit and eat some pizza in the process, take your girl out, take your wife out, whatever you want to do, come hang out. Stamford. Yes. Super fun. Always a good time. And I play everything up there, bro. I play everything.
Yeah.
From fucking hip hop to, you know how I get down. So
the food's really wonderful.
The food is amazing. The food is absolutely amazing. Anyways, shameless plug, Fortina. Yes. Very good stuff.
Yeah, man. Talk your shit, bro.
I'm talking.
Yeah, man. Just like you said, man, for producers, there's going to be some revered, up and coming producers, which is great because, it is a producer podcast, not just hip hop, but, just production period.
Yeah. Let's just get that out the way. There's going to be a lot of different shit going on, and we can't really disclose who we got coming up next, but we got some treats in store. And yes, you guys just got to lock in, man. Click the link in the show description. Listen to the Hassan Mackey record. And make sure you follow the Chop Shop on all social medias. And make sure you lock in with the Chop Shop playlist, too. Don't forget, I almost forgot to plug that shit.
Yeah. Hey, what am I wearing right now, pal? I mean, come on. I got the merch on,
too, you got
pal.
The Chop Shop gear on. That's right.
Yeah. Coming out guns blazing, pal. But more importantly, pal, my friend, it once again, for the producers, man, this is
for sure.
Yeah, we're going to have a great time. And this is just normal for us, man. I mean, we found ourselves talking about producers and production on the
every
phone
day.
And
every day. Anyways, back to Sean J. Period. Dude is an absolute OG and has been in the music business for quite some time now. And if you don't know, you're about to find out because
absolutely
drumstacks.com is one of the dopest sound packs around. Period.
Yeah.
End the story.
Wow. Yeah.
And the best part, not only is Sean paying it forward by sharing his stuff with the world, but it's all drums curated by Sean himself. $39.99, yeah. One-time fee, and you don't have to pay anymore. That's it. It's $40. No, Sean will kill me if I say that shit. $40.
It's $39.99. Yeah. That's really dope. I have them. I enjoy them. And
you use them all the time.
I do monthly. And then monthly, man, it's like waiting for Christmas, man, because some new drums are coming and you don't have to pay for them.
Like waiting for something new to drop.
Yeah.
Sean drops.
That makes sense, man. That's actually
100%.
Some great, I mean, that's just a great way of selling your product, man.
Without any further ado, if you're in your car, wherever you're listening to the show from, make some noise, pull over, pull up a seat. Sean J. Period's in the building.
Yes, yes, yes.
Dude, listen, I appreciate you coming on the show, man. First guest, you know
what
I mean?
Thank you, man. It's an honor. When I found that out, I was like, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
First of all, this producer for me was very instrumental in my come up, period. I remember distinctly in around 95, 96, looking on records because I was heavily buying records and just looking for inspiration. And I believe the first record I came by was Universal Magnetic. We were in the same pocket, so to speak, but as a producer, we tend to dive in. And I remember distinctly, remember you had the Eddie joint. Most deaf gonna keep your naked like oomfu. Wow, that's crazy, like the oomfu thing.
Right, right.
But the beat was crazy, and it was Universal Magnetic by Mos Def. and Sean J. Period is the producer. We are very, very honored. It is our first episode at the Chop Shop. And Sean J., we are just really happy that you agreed to do it with us, man. So, ladies and gentlemen, Sean J. Perry.
Yeah, that was a fucking good. That was a good fucking.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was
look,
good.
Look, with the deep voice, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, even though like on the track, there were like pterodactyls. You know,
yeah,
that shit was fire.
Story about that. A story about that too.
We gonna get into it.
Yeah, but appreciate it. Be definitely a pleasure.
Yeah, dude. No, for sure. I appreciate you coming on the show. So, what was it like working with Mos Def? An experience, right? I mean, and I know we're talking 20 plus years ago. Is it 20 years? 95.
Yeah, that record.
I'm fucking terrible.
It was
out,
like 97.
97.
Yeah.
96 in that window, right?
I mean, just sitting in the studio with him and Talib just had to be an experience, right?
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying,
already?
Yeah, I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah. We all artists, man. You feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gotta lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
Yeah, the interesting thing, like thinking back on it, we were like young kids. See, like looking back in retrospect, we can really see it's like, oh man, that moment. But then and I know you know this because you just like different stories that you've shared offline,
right,
you know, and talking to both of you, it's like you see things from a different perspective, you know? We're looking in the rearview mirror of it and we're seeing, okay, that, wow, we were there. But when you were in it, you were just kids trying to just do what you had to do. You know, I didn't look at Mos like, ah, Mos. I looked at him like, oh, he's dope. You know, Talib, he's dope. Let's work together, you know?
So let me ask you this question real quick. So just, you know, grassroots Sean J. Period. You are a Virginia native.
Correct.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What part from Virginia?
Richmond.
Okay. Richmond. It doesn't matter because something's in the water from VA. Like
that was Pharrell's, the name of Pharrell's. Right before the pandemic, he did that. What did he did? Like a music festival at Virginia Beach on the beach.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
But I didn't make that shit.
Yeah, no.
I didn't make it up. I was dead serious, man, because all the producers, every single producer I know from Virginia is fucking fire. Mm. Seriously.
Thank you, man.
You know, yourself, you know, you got Knots, you know, there is
Bink.
I mean, there's Bink.
Oh, Bink is from VA too.
I would count D'Angelo in that, even though he's an artist, he's a producer, you know.
No, but he was beat making too.
Yeah.
Like, but there's so many producers, man, that come out of VA. There's Timbaland.
Right. Pharrell.
There's Chad and Pharrell.
Right.
I mean, we're talking like seriously, like it's crazy. Like, there's a new kid right now, Drew Dave.
Mm, okay.
Drew Dave is amazing. Another Virginia producer.
I have to check out I heard his name too.
Oh, Sean, he's incredible, man. But say that to say this, man, that your origin story, how'd you end up in New York?
Well, I mean, obviously New York was the initial impetus for hip hop, right? And it's like a ripple in a pond that, you know, the rock entered the water and it just spread. And as it spread, it blended with the different ideologies of a local area. You know, that's why, you know, as it goes to different the South interpreted it a certain way, the West Coast interpreted it, you know, and as it goes further out. So I ended up in New York because, you know, obviously being exposed to hip hop, and a lot of times people would, you know, bring mixtapes down, and we would watch certain videos and stuff like that. And, you know, just like anybody else, we were just, you know, observing the growth of hip hop, enjoying it. A lot of times people, artists would come through town and tour at like the Richmond Coliseum. Like my first concert I went to was the New York City Fresh Fest, right? Which I think was the, yeah, which was like one of the first. Recently I was looking at it, and you know,
Houdini,
Fat Boys,
Run DMC. Yeah,
I think like David DMX was on there too, like as a you know, obviously probably add on or whatever like that, right? Wasn't necessarily on the main bill, but
yeah,
I remember my uncle took my cousin and I, you know, it was a school night. Yeah, I think it was a Sunday. They had the concert. I remember it was a school night. Took us, you know, in his Volkswagen Bug, you know what I mean? And it was like, you know, so
it was all crammed up in that.
Yeah.
Like a clown car.
Yeah. It's like, you know, yeah, I have to actually thank you for that too. I have to reach out to him. Because look, no other, my parents were going to take us, you know what I mean? And this is, I got to reach out to her for that.
Those were the fucking days, man. And like,
sure. and we all had tight jeans on back then.
we
were rocking acid, either
acid wash, like two tone stripes, whatever.
The Lee stripe jeans, Lee stripe pants, or either 501s, like they were tight, especially around that time. Yes, yeah, you're right. I get it. Yeah,
you're right. With tight all the way down, not like these, with like baggy up top and tight at the like the egg, you know, toward the calf. It's like tight straight, like you know.
And I probably had there was like five motherfuckers in the Bug, like
yeah, man. Yeah, but it was great, man. So then you know, obviously progressed on, and then was in different groups with you know different people throughout high school, you know, and this guy named like Rusty, I ended up he ended up being a DJ, and then we did it's just a bunch of people, right? So, and then my cousin Jeremy, and I he went to VCU, and then I was a year behind him, and then, but actually previously before in high school, the DJ who ended up Mayor, who ended up he ended up helping us to get signed because his aunt was Carmen Ashers Watson, so she basically was like running, you know, part of Def Jam and then Rush Communications, you know, in a leadership position. So Mayor knew Bobito, you know, from interning at Def Jam in the summer. So yeah, so as
cucumber slice,
right? So as we worked on the demo, we were fortunate to have, you know, an outlet to, you know, we tried to send it to, you know, you send them in the mail and you send it to, you know, different people, whatever, but we had a direct connect. So once we worked on the demo and he gave it to Bobito, you know, Bobito, like we didn't sign to Def Jam or anything like that, but because Bobito and Stretch had the show together, Stretch was the A&R at Big Beat Atlantic. So that's ultimately how, you know, we connected, you know, with Big Beat Atlantic. And then once we actually probably signed the deal in 90, late winter of 91 or some round in there. And then we moved to New York in 92. So
crazy.
Yeah. So I was in high school. I mean, Jeremy, I think he was his third year. And then Mayor and I were in our second year because we graduated together. And then, so
wait. You were still in high school. No,
college. We were in college.
In college. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about high school too.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you said it. No, we graduated high school together. I was just trying to get the timeline straight. So my cousin was at VCU and then I went to VCU and then Mario went to a school, historic black college, St. Paul's down in Virginia as well. So
that's amazing, man. So you literally, it had to be scary to pack, like we're going to the city, we're moving to the city. We're talking about your group, right? Down South, right?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. I did my homework on Down South.
Okay.
And, you know, it's funny because Sean, you and I come from the same bracket. time period. I just want to know, like, were you guys set up? Like, when you came here, like, was the deal signed already? What label was it on down south?
Big Beat Atlantic. So Big Beat was
okay.
a subsidiary. And Craig Coleman, the CEO, you know, he was mm-hmm. basically running that. But funny enough, Craig Coleman, unless it changed within the last 2 years of when I had a conversation with him, he's still the CEO of Atlantic. So he went from Big Beat to being all these years later, you know? So,
yeah.
You know,
they never leave, right?
Yeah, longevity, you know what I mean? But yes. Yeah, so that's how we ended up, you know, and obviously it was through Stretch, right? Because Stretch was the A&R, and then Bobito was the connect because they had the show, right? Yeah, so that was it.
That is amazing. That's amazing. So Stretch signed you guys.
Correct. And then after that, Rob Reef Too Low, he became the A&R after that. And kind of took the project through, you know, the goalpost. So Stretch was roughly halfway through with us. And then, because it took us multiple years to record the album, you know, so
yeah,
for various reasons. So
shouts to Reef, Sirius XM Days.
Yeah, Reef.
Yeah, for sure. Reef's all right.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know Reef too.
I sat in his office a few times. He was like, yeah, these beats are all right.
The one thing about Reef, and I'm going, all of them, you know, between Stretch, Reef would do this thing, and you need certain people to like to just go at you,
yeah,
to like send you home, like what,
yeah.
Like you said, he used to do this thing, like, you know, now mind you, they paired us with the Beat Nuts, T-Ray. You know, all kinds of different people. So we were sitting at the feet of these guys, you know, as their careers were really growing.
Yeah.
And I used to bring beats in and stuff like that. And then, but he literally took this though. So this is why he's like, he said, you come in here with those Dixie cup snares. And he would do. And I'm like,
that's crazy. Yeah. But I didn't even get that. At least you got a critique. I was just like, yeah.
Well, I was side. So, I mean, he had to give me the critique, right? But the thing though, bro, like, when I look back on it, like, that type of advice, right? And specifically him, because he was one of the ones who did it, right? I only had a few people to do it, but it really made me better, bro, because it sent me like, it's like the competitive thing. You know, hip hop is competitive, right? It just, even outside of hip hop, someone tells you can't do something. Human nature kicks in. It's like, what?
Yep.
You know, now if someone has a lower self-esteem, they internalize that and it just, they take it as, oh, you know what I'm saying? But if you have the heart of a lion, bro, it's like, what? You mean Dixie cups? I'm gonna prove you wrong. I'm like, you know, but it makes you better.
Well, God bless you, Sean, because there are many producers that do not have that thick skin. Obviously,
I didn't have
thick
skin at the time.
Yeah, but you had already gone from your home in Virginia to Manhattan, to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So you had no choice. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like you really did. They really didn't. So you were, I'm guessing that you were, you know, willing to accept all critiques and learn from it.
Yeah. It was hard though. It was hard. And the thing is too, you had mentioned earlier, you were saying about, I think you were getting ready to go into this question about like the support system. What support system did we have coming here? And the beautiful thing that Mayor really, you know, it was his family that embraced us. You know, we moved with his family in Brooklyn. We actually were street over from Biggie. So we saw a lot of, we saw Biggie when Biggie was on the block before he really got signed.
That's crazy.
He had Junior Mafia up at like, you know, the corner, you know, the bodega, you know.
Yeah.
I assume I know what they're doing, but it's like, but cool. It's like, what's up? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then because like, let's say Reef, and Stretch, all of them ran in the same circles with Matty C. And I think Matty C was the one who discovered Biggie, or at least brought him forward, right?
Yeah.
So that's wow, wow. Up being in those circles, man.
Yo, but, yo, like this is why I'm very happy that you are the first guest, because like literally your stories, like we're 6 degrees, you know, separation.
Yeah,
sure. like we really are, because like you say Stretch and Bobito, on the flip side, you know, they were responsible for whatever, you know, light that we had, because I was a part of a independent label called True Criminal.
Yeah, we talked about this. Yes.
Yeah. So the first guys that embraced us really was Bobby and Stretch.
Right.
Like the whole movement with Ox Skills and FT. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, FT. Yeah, Street
Smarts. I did all those original records, you know, myself, Buck Wild,
that's awesome,
Laura Finesse, you know, but they championed the shit. So I mean, it's just amazing how when I look at Stretch and Bobby, how they just got inducted into I think the Radio Hall of Fame. They just did like a few days ago. I just saw they deserve.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, they really
check that out.
Yeah, I mean, but you're out of that lineage, man. And I remember everything distinctly, and I remember your records, man. I really do, man. I can't say it enough. Like, I just remember, man. Like, because we were all on the same wavelength. You know what I'm saying? Like, but let's go back, because before you even made it to the city, and when you're in Virginia, I want to know who your inspirations were, and how you got started. Was it? I mean, producing. Period. No pun.
Mm-hmm. Right.
you know, I listen to your music, and I just want to know, like, coming from Virginia, and listening to hip hop music, what were your first splash into hip hop being in Virginia, mm-hmm. and then your production and how it came about?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, man. I think we heard a lot of the, you know, Melly Mel's, and, you know, you were hearing it, right?
Yeah.
It just, but I actually, I'm going to answer it a little bit later, because, you know, hip hop was obviously growing, and I remember hearing Dougie Fresh, you know, one of the first hip hop songs they played on like actual radio, like the FM radio.
And yes.
It was just different things. Right. But I'm going to jump in from the point that, you know, the song, and I was talking to somebody recently about this, that I remember when I heard my cousin Tyrone, he had, he was from the city. So I would say I grew up in the rural area or whatever, right outside.
Where I am in White Plains.
The equivalent. Yeah. The equivalent.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But he would go to Richmond with his family. And I remember he came back with a VHS tape, and it had all these different videos on it. Right. You know, from, My Posse's on Broadway. It was broad, right.
Yeah.
To Power Rule, to whatever, right. All this stuff. But it was a specific song that I heard this song on AM radio. Mm-hmm. WANT was a station in Richmond. So the AM, obviously, you know, lesser bandwidth, I guess, quality, yeah. Whatever. But I remember I heard Gangstar's Manifest on AM radio.
Oh my God.
So from an influence standpoint, I had earlier influences than that.
Yeah.
But I think that song, when I heard that song, I mean, I remember it. Like, it hit me. And then so what happened was I heard the song on the radio. And then when I got the videotape, you know, it had the various songs, and he had the Manifest video on it. Right. Yeah. And I was like, and to see who it was, because I didn't know it was just a song. Right.
Yeah.
And to see Guru, and then obviously Premier. Yes. And then I went out and bought the No More Mr. Nice Guy on cassette.
I believe, right? That was the 89, because I graduated from high school that year, and I think I distinctly remember
it was 89.
I'm willing to say that.
I thought it was before then, bro. Like,
well, No More Mr. Nice, but you said Manifest. I like Manifest. Uh-huh. I believe, I don't know if you might
know. No More Mr. Nice Guy came out in 89.
What'd I say?
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, okay. It was my senior year of high school, and I just remember that record, Manifest.
But Manifest came out before, obviously, the single, before they released that album, right? Were they doing it like that?
I don't think it was in 88. I'm willing to bet. I just remember.
I just feel like it was, dude, I graduated in 90, and I feel like it was earlier. I mean, it could have, you know, it's what it was. But
oh, we
like
the same crew, you know,
yeah.
89, 90, baby. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
See, I know the connection.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure, man. But I attribute, like I said, I had heard many songs, right? But that,
yeah,
it's something about the way Premier, and this is me reflecting, you know, being 50 now, like,
yeah,
like he literally is one of my favorite producers that I don't necessarily think about like every day, but then I realize like the impact, right?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And like I tell people about why I stopped sampling and stuff, like, you know, the various things. But like I tell people, it's not a hatred towards sampling. I said my favorite songs are samples, right? Like it was just a choice I made to just expand my musicianship and what I wanted to do, right?
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
Right. But Manifest and Come Clean are my two favorite songs. You know what I mean?
So are your favorite Gangsta records?
There's a lot, but I would say from a pure influence standpoint, those are the ones that immediately, because obviously it really is Premier, right? You know, because he Premier.
Yeah, I second the whole Premier thing.
Yeah, but that's crazy, Sean, because when I hear your early roots of your production, obviously we were all influenced by Premier. But when I think of your earlier roots and the records that introduced me to you, it feels like Tribe. And I'm a Tribe guy.
That's true. No. I am a Triber. So we're not talking about like that. I'm glad you picked it up, because that's totally of like the pure line per se.
Yeah.
It's definitely Tribe, of even the native tongue of De La, of all this stuff. But Tribe for sure. No doubt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Cause
but I think that the impetus would really, it's just a connection point with Premier. I think that just how Premier approaches a sample, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How he, you know, where he, the, like, could you listen to some of the stuff? Like the Shelly Man thing is easy, right? With Come Clean, because that's like going right off the top.
Yeah.
But that even influences how I do sound design. Like, I use that as an example. Like, but then you could listen to Mass Appeal.
You just took the words out of my mouth. Like, I'm glad you brought that up, because Mass Appeal is the magnum opus of Gangstar. Every time I think of Gangstar, maybe Step Into the Arena, Into the Arena. I'm not gonna say Dwick because it was a guest record, but it's Mass Appeal. It's the illest record. It's one of the illest records I've ever heard, and it's just a.
It's
smidgen.
So small where he got it from. I'm like, what? Because I listened to the record, like, you know, they do those sample videos on YouTube where it's like so and so sample this or whatever.
Yes.
And I'm like,
huh?
The patience that he had to have, even just sitting in the studio listening to the records, playing, eating peanuts, whatever, right? Whatever he's doing. And they go, dun, 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 and it goes on. And I'm like, oh, like, dude.
Over and over, and just dun, dun, brum, 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 and over and over, just that the one bar, you know what I'm saying? Like,
and he could do that. Not many people could take something that had a repetitive nature and still make you like it still grew. Because if you know, like, even back in the day, obviously we were into loops and stuff. Now new music really evolves and changes and drops and does stuff like that.
Yeah.
But he could literally take that. Scratches and it just like you could just listen to it for hours, you know.
Mass Appeal is a record that I can honestly play every time I hear it, and it just never
shit'll never get old, bro.
It never gets old. That's right, React. It never gets old, but it's super repetitive. But it, you know how you find that magic, and
And it's with the triplet kick though, because you.
Oh yes.
Like it's just like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. It just rolls you over. It's like falling down a step, like, you know,
man. Keep,
you know.
So Sean's like, so we all have our stories about janky equipment. My question to you is, did you come in as a DJ? Obviously you were MCing, you know. I just want to know, like, you know, did you come in as a DJ or a producer, or and just your origins of like the first piece of equipment? I mean, did you have to go through, you know, I had to go through pause tapes, you know, did you do the pause tape, you know, just your first things of production?
I would say that to answer the initial question, definitely came in just as MC production, you know, as I mentioned earlier, was just more of a function for the MC, you know, to have something to rap to or whatever like that. I say, let's start with my first sampler. My first sampler was a Digitech Time Machine. It was like this 2-second sample. It's something crazy, right? You know?
Oh my gosh, Sean.
Yeah.
Hey. Digitech.
And then I ended up doing like the 4-track, like I had a Fostex 4-track, and then we do like, you mentioned like the pause tape thing. Right. But then do it like, so, you know, whatever. No. Stop. It's for the track. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
Like that. And then graduated to a Roland TR-505.
Mm.
Right.
I remember that.
And then an Alesis HR-16.
Okay. So that's interesting, because it's crazy that you say that, because the first things, like, you know, I had the like the little Casio dink, you know, mm-hmm. jam it on the one. That was the Casio.
the Cosby edition.
Yeah, the Casio one and shit and dink, you know, like you would, but we were tracking, but it's not about me. It's about you. What you just said, like you said Digitech. So my first sampler was, I had a Digitech. It was a guitar foot pedal.
Mm.
The Digitech 5000 or 8000. It was like a little blue pedal. It had two pedals.
Mm.
Yeah, it was like literally like two little pedals. And you can jimmy it into the mixer, right?
Mm.
And shout out to my cousin Seth Marcel, because this was his equipment. But you said Digitech, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned the Alesis drum machine.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his equipment. This was my first generation of really tracking. And we had like it started off with a Fostex.
Mm. but you know something though? Think about this. Like we're marveling, like we had some of the same equipment. But then you have to think from a pure marketing standpoint.
Yeah.
It was probably some of the only pieces out. So it was like, you know what I mean? Like we live in a world where we are awash in everything.
Oh my God.
Right?
Yes.
Whereas, you know, because why did most people, you know, the Kanye, all these people talk about the AR 16 or
the ASR,
EPS 16 plus, or
yes,
the, you know, the MPC, the SP1200, the, you know, it's like the world we came from was small in terms of equipment. You know, in that application. So
I'm telling you, it was the craziest shit ever. And and my sampler, it was both Digitech. So I would have to hit what guitar players use, and they would loop their stuff and build upon it. Right. It was a looper. It was the first generation. And
that makes sense, though, because Digitech still makes guitar pedals and all kinds of stuff. So that actually makes sense.
Yeah. And it was crazy, because I was like, oh, man, like, but it was just grueling, because we would do the beat on the drum machine, right, and lay that down, and then hit the samples, get our samples, and we would literally had to for 3 minutes and 30 seconds or however long the song was, we had to tap the pedal on beat,
right,
and that was just one layer. Like, so I say that to say this, your Digitech, was it a sample? Like, did you have to do the same thing, or did it loop around, or
it's interesting because that particular unit not only did sampling, but it had like effects on it, like delay and other things.
Echo.
So it's kind of an expanded unit. I think that from a sampling standpoint, it's basically has, you know, the loop part, like you're talking about the pedal, but then it's just a trigger, right? So it
it was a trigger. It's not a sequencer. We had to tap it. We had to
psh. Right. Yeah, it's not a sequencer, so it, right. it would technically be the same. It's just in rack form with more expansion, the expanded effects and things of that nature. You know what I mean?
Year was this?
Oh, dude. I can't even remember, bro. I mean, it was in the 80s. Okay. In the 80s. That's all I can. That's all I can say. It's in the 80s. Okay.
So you did your earlier demos with that, and then all of a sudden, like, what was your weapon choice? Graduating out of all of that stuff, you know, what'd you start to use?
EPS 16 plus. So when we got to college, you know, we would. The group down, we still were, we were forming, right? The down south group. We weren't down south at the time. I think we're the J team because all of our last names end with J, so it's kind of, you know, the thing, right?
That's
so
dope.
Anybody who's gone to college knows that, you know, when you're in high school, you know, you're borrowing money and, you know, whatever, unless you're wealthy, whatever, right? But when you get to college,
yeah.
You have no idea like how the credit card companies come on you, right? Trying to get you the credit card. So I say that to say,
right in your mailbox. Remember that?
Yeah, I say it to say, just because you got to college, get you hooked. It's like, you know, it's like dropping off, you know, hey, try this, you know, trying to get you hooked on it, which ultimately it does. To all these years later, the credit card fix started my freshman year. You know, and I've managed out of that.
Hey, you want to hear a fun fact? I don't know if you remember this.
Go.
The EPS 16 Plus had 1 megabyte of memory, and it was expandable up to 2 megabytes.
Yeah, we had to put the expansion in it. Yep.
Two megabytes, bro.
So freshman year, we need to expand. We're trying to get signed. We're trying to expand. So my cousin Jeremy, who was in a group, he became Soda Pop in the group. But we basically, he was a sophomore. I was a freshman. And the credit cards come around. And it's like, wait a minute. And then, so we ended up basically, we had some little cash, right? But we ended up both getting credit cards from whoever, I think it was Citibank or somebody, whoever it was, right? And we went to, so out of Richmond, we called around hearing about this EPS 16 plus, because the guys, you know, you always have musicians at school, you know, people who travel, like come from New York or different places, but one particular guy had one. And then also we took a trip out to Cleveland, you know, because obviously you're in the hustle, you're just trying, you meet people and you're trying to do whatever. We saw some different people. It was like, all right, so we're going to get this. So we basically pulled a little cash and some credit cards and traveled up to, I think it was Ace Music in, it's near JMU. So James Madison University. I forgot the town that it's in, but you know, that's the mountains of Virginia. So we traveled up there to get, you know, an EPS 16 plus. And from that, so that particular unit lasted with me all the way through to when I stopped, when I went to using Logic and, you know, whatever I'm using. But mainly,
wow.
You
know, what? But what did, all the what most did it stuff, set you back, Sean J. Period.
It was in, it all, was in the, it was in,
because it was on the credit card.
Huh? Wow. I'm going, that's a general thought that it was in the thousands for sure, but it wasn't great, but enough to, you know, college kids, you know, but that specific unit has probably the most history of all the pieces of equipment as far as in things that I've done, because it was the stuff we did, the down south stuff on. And then when we were no longer on the label, you know, I kept the unit because the guys got into other stuff. Then it became, you know, the Most Def stuff is done on it, the, you know, Held the Skelter, any of that stuff, really, you know.
Wow.
Then I'm getting into like SP1200 and blah, blah, blah. But we can get into that. So we're talking about first stuff right now. So
yeah.
Speaking of Held the Skelter, how is working with Sean Price? Because Eddie knows he's like my favorite fucking rapper of all time.
Yeah. The whole group, like, it's interesting because connecting with them, I actually connected with them through a former role manager of ours, Joey. She basically had connected with Evil D, right? So now you listen to the music, right? And you know, Bucktown and all these different things, right? Mm-hmm. But then you meet, like, so my first introduction in was really meeting Evil D and Walt, the B minus, right?
Oh, of course. Right. Right. Like, oh, I got a side story about that name too.
And the guys are so nice. Like they are. Just like, so then Baby Paul was a part of the B minus at the time, and he was the one who they generally put the word, but they obviously were doing their work. But Baby Paul was the one who he basically, because he was working with them. I think he did La Fly, La Fly, Score Sky, something like that, right?
Oof.
And
yes.
That was kind of the introduction to them. But then Evil D was like the cosign. It was like the, working on two different fronts to, you know, to promote me to them. And then when I met Buckshot and Drew, you know, it was like, this was cool. Like, the thing is, to all of them, bro, like Sean, you know, all of them, just super cool, man. Like, and I didn't grow up as a street cat, right?
Yeah.
You know, but moving to New York, obviously, I'm street adjacent, right? I didn't grow up in the streets, but I'm street adjacent. And I see them, like, this is an assumption, but they probably grew up, obviously, there, but they weren't the deep street cats. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Like, just, you know, in interacting with them. But
Rock was definitely, like, you know, I just saw his People's Party interview.
Okay.
Rock grew up pretty tough.
Okay. Yeah. But, and like I said, it's an assumption. I don't know them all. But they definitely gave off the vibe. Like, it wasn't just all about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was there, but then it was like, you know, having fun. Like, it was cool, you know, but I remember being in the studio. We were working on, it was a compilation, and it was a young artist named Illinois who was on the label and stuff like that. So, So I did a song for him, and then they were on it. Right. Cause that was, you know, the second time I had worked with them, because I did the Place to Be on the Nocturnal album, you know, and that was my first foray. I had bought a bass guitar. I was like, do, right.
Oh, snap.
But all it, so that was like, you know, playing to it. And you know, anybody who plays bass knows that you have to learn how to control the strings. So I'm like, strings kind of ringing a little bit. And just like, you know what I mean? But I made it work. I sampled it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's dope.
Sean's dope.
Yeah, that's crazy. You just mentioned Drew Ha, because Drew is a Syracuse grad. As well.
Okay, nice.
So I used to do beats for Drew. And
Drew used to rap?
And, yes, okay. He did. And he was in a group called 2020 at Syracuse. One of my best friends still to this day, who is co-founder of True Criminal Records, Alex Gruthius. We call him Gru the Mastermind.
Mm-hmm.
Then he graduated, and before you know it, like, literally maybe 2 years or a year later, he came back to Syracuse with Black Moon.
Mm.
And you brought up the beat miners, Walt and Evil D. This is another fun fact.
Mm-hmm.
They are the beat miners, but they are not the original beat miner. The original beat miner is my brother in beats, Ike Lee III.
Oh, okay? Okay.
Yes, Ike Lee. A good friend of mine taught me a lot. We call him Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
He has produced for, he was signed to Kedar Massenburg.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He was a part of a production crew, three boys from Newark, but he was actually from Queens. He's from Queens. He's cut from the cloth of, like, Mantronics.
Okay. Gotcha.
But Ike Lee is the original beat miner. If you look on Cool Keith,
mm-hmm.
or Ultra Mag, it was Cool Keith record,
right?
Papa Large, Big Shot on the East Coast. So there was, So there were two different versions: the West Coast, East Coast. And I look on the credits and I see produced by the Beat Miners, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it only had Ike's name; it just had Ike Lee III. So fast forward to when we became friends and acquaintances, I asked him, like, "Yo, you were in the Beat Miners?" He was like, He was like, no, like that was, I was the beat miners. He was friends with Walt and Evil because they used to shop and go dig. And he would see them all the time and they became friends and they asked for their name and he gave it to them.
Okay.
That is a true story.
That's dope, man.
Getting back to you, how did you meet Yasiin Bey? How did that even happen?
I mentioned earlier about Joey. She was a road manager of ours in the group down south. So she worked for like a business manager of Tavel and Thea, right? So Tavel and Thea handled Tribe. They handled specifically Tribe, but the Bush Babies, right? So in her work in there, she had befriended Khalil or Mr. Man from the Bush Babies. So
yes.
So, you know, and she's still, you know, out there promoting. You know, we weren't necessarily the group at the time, but just I was still hanging around and stuff. And then she introduced me to him. It's like, yeah, you need to meet Khalil and, you know, all the stuff like that. So we hit it off. And then he was starting to learn how to use the SP-1200. I already was using it. Right. So it was like, you know, we're just fast friends. Yeah. And it was like, it was cool. And then they were working on that new album, the Gravity album.
Yep.
So in the process of helping him and, you know, just showing him stuff, we showing each other stuff because he took it to another level. You know what I mean? He's one of those cats, once he locks in on it, like he's going to blow past you pretty soon when he's going to master something. You know what I mean? You know,
Bush Babies, shout out the Bush Babies.
Shout out the Bush Babies. Yep.
Yeah.
And, they were working on the Gravity album. So we basically, you know, started the process. So I ended up doing the intro, outro and two other songs. And it was a pivotal moment because that's where I met, like, you know, you have certain moments in your like Kairos moments where certain things come together, right? Like a bunch of streams, small streams that look like, what's going on? They all come, but then they come out into the mighty river that can change the course. It's powerful, right? You know, power villages and do whatever, right? So it was a powerful moment when he introduced, because most came in, we were at Battery Studios, and most came in to introduce, you know, he was like, hey, he's going to do some poetry, kind of rap poetry stuff over the intro outro. So he brought it, I met him at Battery Studios, right? And then from there, you know, we were cool. We rapped on it, sounded great. We just did what we did. And then, you know, sometime later after the album, so right when the album was finishing, they needed one more single. So obviously when you're working on an album, you're part of the contributing group. So you just, everybody's still trying to contribute. So it was like Bob Power, we were already starting to mix. So Bob Power was mixing and they like, oh, we want a single, right? Or something, you know, that's the nature of how record companies would, they want as many singles as possible, some that potential. And so in the process, I end up coming up with Universal Magnetic, you know, and they ended up not using it. But, you know, it became a song that, you know, a couple of weeks later, when Mr. Man brought Most to the house, he ended up, you know, picking it. You know, and that, so obviously that's a story for, you know, encouragement for producer, just because one person doesn't use it, you know, the next man can.
For sure. That's some shit.
Yeah, bro.
You always hear people passing on beats. Mm-hmm. But, you know, recently Mad Skills came out and had a beat tape, and he showed the tape, had Jay's handwriting on it. And he was scrolling through the tape, listening to the tape, right? And the Far Side record comes on. Mm. He's like, oh shit, I fucking passed on this record.
Wow.
Imagine. Yeah. So it was one of those things where it's like one man's trash is another man's
treasure.
You know, treasure. Because sure. I mean, that's passing me by is like one of the biggest hip hop records like ever, you know? So it's funny that you said that, because I watched that video yesterday, 2 days ago, and he was like, wow, I can't, this is the tape. Like, he was shocked, you know? He was like, wow, this is the tape. I found it. This is the tape that has the original beat on it that the Far Side took, that JD gave me before the Far Side took it. And so I passed on the
we're talking about Run? Oh, we're talking about, Passing Me By, right?
My bad. We're talking about Running.
Running, right.
My bad.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, we're talking about Running, not Passing Me By. Yeah. See? Fucked up my whole story. Damn.
No, it's still the same.
Right. Yeah, we're talking about Running. That's right. He passed on Running. Mad Skills passed on the Running beat.
Yeah, but the thing is, too, and I didn't even realize that in doing the Mad Skills album.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You worked with him, too.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I didn't know him from Virginia, but because he was signed to Big Beat, when I became an independent producer, wasn't signed anymore, Rob then connected me. So it was just like, you know, chopping beats and stuff. He ended up picking, I did 3 beats on there. And
right. Well, we got Inherit the World, all in it, and Street Rules. Street Rules, right.
Yeah. And the thing is too, but Jay, I didn't, you know, you're just doing a record and there's different producers on there. But like there's a lot of people on it. But like Dilla or JD at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was on that record too, right? So it's like, you know, you know? So it's like some of the first records the Mad Skill was the first record I did that was released as an independent producer outside of the group. You know what I mean? So it was the turning point when I talked about those Kairos moments, the turning point
to
lead me down the path, you know what I mean? Of producing and stuff like that, independent wise. But if you listen to Running and the song that Mad Skills picked, they were in the same vein. You know what I mean? Like it had, what is it? So the Running is in my mind now. I'm like, I can't think of the, but
they had a certain
feel to it. Right. So, I don't think, you know, he wouldn't have obviously made Running it would have been different, you know?
Right.
So it's good that he passed on. It's good that he chose the one he had, you know?
Right. Yeah, man. Your story is,
common.
It's crazy. Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, it's inspiring. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, now that I'm getting back into the swing of things, like with production, when I have the time and whatever the case is, you know, I'm always struggling to find the sound. You know, and I find that I'm starting to realize that less is more. Talking about, you know, drums and, you know, now I guess now, you know, with drum stacks, you know, super dope idea. And me and Eddie were talking about it. You know, there's a lot of like spoon fed shit out there, you know, and a lot of whack stuff too that people make you pay for, you know, and make you pay for over and over again, whether it's a subscription or it's like a volume one, a volume two, three. You're fucking gonna put all these together and charge you triple the what I was paying. You know what I mean? Right. So the $40 one shot.
$39.99.
I'm sorry. I charged the fucking charge the juice, 1 cent juice. I'm obviously, sorry.
No, but it's
$39.99.
Pay one time, $39.99. So the rhyme, pay one time, $39.99.
Pay one time, $39. Makes sense. Keep it hip hop. Yeah. I understood. Super but dope. I'll take the penny. Because yeah. You know, the new sounds monthly and how you only got to pay the one time and then you get new sounds. You don't have to worry about it. It's not a subscription. That's just very humble, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up because this is something I definitely wanted to say, you know, like in having it, you know, definitely feel like it's a great idea. You know what I mean? And last year, like, you know, I was putting the sounds out and then I got to a point where it was like I was trying to figure out, I mean, not so much the sound. Sound-wise, it's just I just jump in and experiment and just, you know, stuff like that. But I think that, like, I set myself up. It probably was the first real business that I started. Like, you know what I mean? Putting out stuff for sale and you, like, and I set myself up really mentally for, like, a disappointment. Because it's just the stages of promotion. And if you're dealing with algorithms and, or you, like, Instagram, like, you want to reach more people than you are. And then people look like busy and people, I don't buy everything that I foresee. So I just, I got away from, like I started, it was just like me. This is what I would do for myself. I'm just sharing it. Right. And just, you know, people help pay and come along, you know, with it. But I just psyched myself out in the process of it, where it was just like, I lost my way on it. It was just like, okay, I'm putting out the sounds, I'm doing it, and I just started to become discouraged. And it's just it made me just like, okay, I just need to like pull back and like revamp, you know. And like we had talked about like offline about just like mental health and stuff. It like I went through like a little depression behind it, man, because it was like my expectations were like, I positioned this thing, you know, right price, and you know, it feel like I'm doing something quality and all this stuff like that. And it's something that's common to everybody who's trying to have just do something, right? Like, but
case in point, man.
Yeah,
case,
like we were talking, and I want you to tell me, you know, a little bit what we were talking about too. But I stopped putting the sounds out. So I'm obviously gonna go back, you know, just pick it up and, you know, keep going and stuff like that. And I let people know, you know, that, but
for sure,
those who are wondering, hey, you know, what happened, you know, and the value they technically have gotten, but I because I stopped, I didn't release during those months and stuff like that. And now I'm back to like, okay, I'm really, yeah, I want the sales and all that stuff, because it just helps, right? You know, to do
100%
equipment or whatever. But I'm back to like doing it where it's like, I want to hear the sound. I want to discover like certain, you know, textures and, you know, all this stuff like that, you know, like, I went out and bought this transformer. Like, I'm getting into all kinds of stuff, right? Like, transformer design.
Sound design is crazy.
Yeah, you know,
sound design is fucking crazy.
Yeah, it was is this guy in California, Big Noise Radio. He sells these transformers. Like, he makes these units you run your stuff through. You know what I mean?
Oh, and yeah, right.
Like, I was talking to Stolen Drums. Stolen Drums had just ordered a piece from him before I got to it, right? So it's just the whole pursuit of texture and stuff. And,
yeah,
like, I'm excited about it to get back to releasing stuff and just pick right up. You know what I mean? And I'm grateful for the graciousness that people gave me when I just took that time off. Because it's mentally, like, I just, it was like, dude, other things in my life were, like, good. And it was like, this thing threw me over here, man. And I'm like, and I guess, you know, not having gone through, you know, I've gone through mental issues, you know, all of us are crazy in some sense, right? Like, you know, all of us have something going on where we're trying to like, that thing is just not processing right. Like it's glitching, you know?
And absolutely.
But in the process, I realized it scared me though. Cause it was like, wow, I'm feeling really down about this. You know what I mean? And I had to regroup. So, you know, not to make it too much about that, but I definitely enjoy doing it. I'm appreciative of all the support. You all, you know, support Eddie, you know, got something toward the end and stuff.
This is the beautiful thing about what we do, man. Like for me and for React, we're all about the working producer, you know, guys who are unsung. That's the word. This is why you're on the show. I say it over again. I remember your records, and I just, you know, I was in a space where I was just like really paying attention to the music. I remember I went to Fat Beats, you know, because shout out to Eclipse. Those are the homies.
Yeah.
And I remember just going there and I copped the Universal and the Body Rock records, you know, and I was just like, yo, you know, more so Universal, because it was just like the textures of that record were just so crazy. You had the pterodactyls, the birds, you know.
Well, that's a real bird. That was a bird that was out there. I was telling React the Bush Baby story. Like I went to, you know, the whole thing about trying to get the single. But that was a bird that used to be in Brooklyn where we live. In the morning, I would tend to work in the morning. Oh, so that's what I say. I've been doing like sound, like all kinds of stuff for a minute.
Just, that's hilarious. Right?
That is hilarious, man.
But that bird would come in the backyard. And we were in the brownstone. The bird would come in the backyard. And because
I
would
fuck it, I'm going to sample the bird.
Right? So
it's a blue jay. A blue jay, right?
I don't know what kind of bird it is. I
believe blue jays are super loud like that.
I have to find. I've heard it like through, you know, still being in New York. I've heard it periodically, but it just was like, dude, and it felt like the same bird. It was just like, cause it just you keep coming back, bro. And I remember thinking that morning, like that we I had left the studio that night, got a nap, was up work trying to work on get this single to go. We were going back to the studio, Universal Magnetic, that what ultimately became the Universal Magnetic. And I was like, "Oh, buddy," I said, "you getting sampled today?" I said, "I put that mic out that window." You know what I mean? And I'm like, dude, you keep coming back. Yeah. And I remember saying, like, you know, I said, I hope this guy don't come back and sue me for publishing. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God, man.
I'm joking to myself, right? But, yeah, it was on there, you know what I mean? And funny, a lot of people mention that, you know what I mean? The bird. Like,
it's hilarious, yeah. Man. Like, it's hilarious, but it was all dope. I was just like, because I was thinking to myself, like, man, you know, I was really studying everybody. And I was just like, wow, he has like other things going on. And then it's like there was like a voice, doo, 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 you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Yes. So I was just like, oh my God, there's so many fucking levels to this record.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite, but I made it so, like, you know, with the trap guy, I ain't making it 20 some seconds, right? But
yeah,
it was like, it was definitely overnight. It just came together, man. It was, and it evolved over time, you know. Thing, like you mentioned about the bird, like Rich Mason, who works with Mos a lot, doing like promoting like the tours and whatever he does,
yeah.
Right? He brings it up and like, you know, just so it's like, but that record. Like something simple like The Roads, right? How The Roads is probably like, so I took a single note, right? So I played it over itself at least probably 30 times. So I played it at different times. So that's why I was going.
Oh my God.
Fucking genius, right? That's genius.
Yes, yes. But
it was just like going. And so the thing with the sound that the record you ultimately heard, the do-do-do-do-do, that wasn't as pronounced in the original, because Mos had you know, me being, I was growing in my Christianity, had just rededicated my life, and Mos growing in his, you know, I think he was a Sunni Muslim, right? So,
yes,
so he's
yes,
growing, he's growing. So he read a book, and I don't know what the source of the book, but he read a book was talking about bass, string instruments evoking evil spirit, whatever it was, right? Horns and whatever, right? So that's why in the beginning of Universal Magnetic, go,
That's
why he did it with his mouth, because it was kind of like this whole, you know, it wasn't a horn, it was his mouth, right? And so then I had to, from that, he wanted the beat, but to honor him.
Oh, there it is right there. There it is. Play it again, React.
That was him doing with his mouth. So,
yo, Mos Def, Def.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So with the bass thing, because I used the actual bass guitar. I used a bass guitar, right? So, in the process of doing it, I ended up taking the Rhodes, the lower notes of the Rhodes, but also I ended up miking up like a little rubber band or something like that. Like Mike didn't like super like you your rubber band is not gonna put out so much, right? But it's like you gotta, you know, just so that's why you get that a certain sound though.
Oh my you know God. What I mean?
There is such a place that creates such a melody. Brooklyn, no ladies, it's a living thing.
You hear the bird?
Yeah.
That's definitely a blue jay. They're the loudest birds.
You know what though? Actually, now that you said it, because it's like I'm sure I'll have to mention it again, and then I'll give you credit. Eddie was he told me what the bird was, right? So I'm like, what I'm gonna do? I'm going to University of YouTube because I find out a lot on YouTube, and just put up like blue jay sounds, and I'll know it.
Bird jay. Here we go. Bird jay call. Irritated blue jays. That sounds like he'd be from New York. Hold on. Let's see what that one sounds like.
Nah, that's
not. Nah, he sounds pissed though.
But I'm gonna search
though. No ladies,
It's a living dream. It's a living dream. It's a living dream. Love, life, this. Recognize all area crew. Whether you speak Japanese.
And you hit a Japanese. Right?
Yeah.
That's the other sound he was making too. It was like the so, but that's all percussion, man.
Before we head out, I did want to bring up a point about producers back when we were coming up. Some were sharing and a lot of them were not.
Right.
And what I mean by that now, there are a lot of producers right now in this day and age that are very unselfish. You being one of them, obviously, you know, with your drum stacks and everything. But back then, man, everything was so secretive and just like they just weren't willing to give up. Have you ever had to, you know, were you on your own or did you have an OG as far as producers? I mean, I know you worked with Q-Tip when you had him in the studio, obviously, which is.
Yeah, but I never worked too directly with him. It was more, you know, just right. His presence. Yeah. So but it, I would so say what, the beat B minus the. Beat Nuts, the, you know, certain people okay. that we came in interdue with the drum down south, but then eventually it became, you know, friends like 88 Keys and all kinds of different yeah. people, you know, Dr. Butcher, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Yeah, he all was right. the one who actually, you know, he helped me a lot to learn the SP 1200, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He mm-hmm. was a Christian, he's a Christian brother, let me, you know. Exposed me to the church more, like he's definitely one of my, you know, all of that, man.
Yeah, that's really dope. I mean, I just felt like,
but
were you like that, per se? Okay.
Yeah, not necessarily with close people, right? Like people, okay, we would share sounds here, but in general, it was the culture. Everyone always tried to hold back on somebody, you know, and even today, don't be fooled. People hold back. But they just
that's what I was getting at, because here come the jokes because you know the sound drum stacks. I know there's a Sean J secret super duper kit that you're holding on to that we cannot access.
at this juncture, because you know what though, I think that and this is me getting back. I made a decision. I'm just doing sound design. I'm not even producing, but somehow producing keeps coming back around where it's like, I want to produce again. Right. So it's like to produce
that's
for
a good
artists.
Thing, that's a good feeling.
And have it to go hand in hand. So, because I'm not personally at the time of like doing this stuff, I'm not competing with it. Like to pull the stash aside, there is no secret stash. Like all of this stuff is literally within my hand, my feeling.
Cause I heard some snares that you've had, and I've heard in your catalog that React and I were listening to prior to you coming on, and I was like, that snare, I don't think I have that in drum stacks.
Yeah, no. Well, any of that stuff, I won't pull. I'm not.
I want my $39.99 back.
I'm not pulling that stuff. I never said that it would be that.
Okay.
Like the most F snares, like that, it would be promoted as that if it was that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. You're the drum stats. Everybody, please go out and cop it. It is truly wonderful, and I think it's just it's groundbreaking what you did. You know, like you know what? Guess what? It's one price, and we're not just gonna keep beating you over the head for $29.99.
That's the best
or
part.
Whatever. You know, like you just adding on. That's the unselfish part. That's what I truly, truly love about you as a producer. That's just unselfish, man. I talked to Stolen Drums. You mentioned Stolen Drums earlier. I talk to Stolen all the time, and he's just always like the nicest person. And I look at you in the same light, man. I really do, man.
Thank
you,
man.
We appreciate you coming to the Chop Shop, man, for real.
Wow.
Yeah, bro.
This dude went from Dixie Cup snares to Universal Magnetic and Body Rock. Let that one sit for a second.
Man.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable story. And the fact that he went from an EPS 16 directly to Logic is also crazy. Dude was using an EPS 16 all the way up until a few years ago.
Yeah, man.
Crazy.
Yeah, crazy. And the Bush babies passed on Universal Magnetic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's crazy, too. That's crazy. That's crazy. Shouts to Sean J. Period. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Make sure you check out drumstacks.com. Drumstacks.com. $39.99. One-time fee. Get all of Sean J. Period's drums from his collection, his personal collection. That's being humble.
Yeah, man. And they get replenished with new drums every month.
That's right. New drums every month.
But you only have to pay once.
$39.99. One time. You could tell he keeps it hip-hop when the tagline rhymes.
For sure. Hey, man. So that was a great show, man. Our first show out the bat. And I feel like we hit a home run.
For sure. For sure. Absolutely. No pun intended. J Period.
Sean J Period.
Anyways, thanks for listening. Keep tuning in. Click the link in the bio. Make sure you follow us. All socials. Make sure you go and check out the Chop Shop playlist. We got a bunch of Sean J. Period joints in there for you. We got a bunch of Eddie James joints in there for you right now. And as these episodes go along, that playlist will get updated with joints from everybody who comes on the Chop Shop.
Peace and love, y'all.